have these four reins, you know, doing them like this, whatever they do, I don't know. And they get flustered with them, you know. In fact, one old boy, I remember seeing, he took his English saddle off, you know, and he gets on bareback, you know, and he's going to run a pole, see. So he goes a-zooming down there, you know, and he gets to the last pole, you know, and you get to the last pole, he goes turn around and come back, you know. Mm-hmm. So he goes a-running down there, you know, posting along, trying to post and all this stuff. And he had his reins up there, you know, and he was going to turn, you know, around, and the horse just kept going on straight, and he pulled on the reins, and the horse just kind of slowly turned around. He got real mad. He put his hand, all the reins together in one hand, pull them around like this in the neck rein, you know, and the horse whipped around, you know. The guy's got some promise there. So the horse came back, and he tried to weave in and out those poles. And the horse wouldn't go. He'd miss them and run into them. It just ended the same. That was down here, so it was the same thing almost, except down there.
Down Cape where you live.
Yeah.
And that's where you work in the stables.
That's where I work in the stables. But see, down there was enough of the Western that we had a good enough show without the old English. So, but the English people, see, they try to get in the act too. You know, we'd give them, you know, we'd have an English pleasure, you know, and all that, you know, for the English people. But we wouldn't bother with that. You know, we just let them have their, you know, and then when our turn came, but they'd always try to get in with us too, you know, so they'd get on their English side and they just make the biggest.
Races in the end, the polls,
yeah,
and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And they just make the biggest.
Anyone could enter.
Yeah, anybody. Yeah.
I see.
And they just make the biggest fools. And I know somebody that's in.
Yeah.
It's
ride up bad, told a stranger, it wouldn't help you.
Oh, no, they'd look at you and stand off, and who's he, you know, and you might even get in trouble, you know, strangers come around, they don't like strangers, you get a knife, you know, and something like that. In fact, a couple of university boys got in some trouble going down there at night, you know, to some of the little country gatherings, you know, little dances and stuff,
yeah.
And got in real trouble, got beat up and stuff like that. Ooh, if you don't know somebody in, you know.
Did you hear any good talking?
Well, a couple of these fellas, you know, like around at the shows, like I was saying about, like Charlie and Joe, they talk pretty much. Of course, I didn't hear them talk about anything but horses.
Yeah.
But they talked pretty good about on their horses, you know, that they had, and their trades and everything. They all like Cookie. They all like Cookie. They trade. They seem to me like they're not very sentimental about their horses, you know. It's just another horse. They just trade it off and get another one. Trade them for another.
They just, if they can help it, they won't have the next horse the next time they see you.
That's right.
The same horse.
That's right. In fact, we'd go to the shows, you know. I'd go down there and I'd see Joe or Charlie and say, "Where'd you get that horse?" "Oh, I traded him for another one, you know." Every time I go, I'd see guys with different horses, you know. Sometimes you just see the same one switched around between the guys, you know. I go around, I say, "Hey, I thought that was your rep." "No, I traded to him for something else, you know." And he got switched back and forth. And they talk right much about their trades. And they always like to tell you about how good a deal they made, you know. "Hey, come over here. Let me show you this deal I pulled, you know. I got this new horse. What do you think of this, boy? I got him plus $50 for this other horse, you know. Something I traded, you know." I always tell you about how great they did, you know. Of course, you never know how much really they did, but they're always talking about their trades, trailers too. You know, I got this horse and trailer for this horse I traded, you know, something like this. And boot, they always ride boot. If I can get boot, you know, you're really doing good. But they got plenty of trades and plenty of things to trade with. You know, but never any money. You know, you'll say, "I'll sell you this horse for $100. "Oh, no, I'll give you something for it. You know, I don't have any money." You know, but they won't say they don't have any money, you know. They won't say, they won't bring out the word money, you know, but they'll just sidestep and say,
"Yeah.
Oh, I'll give you this for it, you know."
"Yeah, I've got a
and
good
yeah, old, I've got a good old, yeah." Only he'll say, "I got a good, brand new, nice, you know, something." Like, you go over there and it'll be a whole junky thing, you know. But never any cash. Never deal with cash. Nothing. Whatever they have. Same with Jimmy. See, he never got any money. In fact, he told me in the beginning he was going to, if I'd ride his horse, he'd pay my entry fees, you know. If I'd ride his horse, you know. And so I thought, well, I can't beat that. You know, I go down there and get ready to enter, you know. And he didn't have any money. No money. So I got no money. So I paid the entry fees.
So you rode his horse and paid the entry
fees. Paid the entry fees, you know. But he never had any money, see? So when he trades his horse around, he never works with money, you know. He just trades it for another horse and a saddle and just, you know. And that
and
old
you
saddle.
Worked his horse.
Yeah, I worked his horse. So,
Well, what did he do?
Watched. When there was two people involved, you know, like the pickup race, the rescue race, he'd do that. But he didn't. In fact, he doesn't even ride anymore. He used to ride, but now that I'm riding, he doesn't ride.
And he didn't have anything to haul in.
No, he had no. He has an old car, old Pontiac car, you know. He works on, you know, and stuff. The thing hardly will run, but he borrows, you know, just to borrow a truck, you know. And he tries to borrow a trailer, but he never can get a trailer.
What did Mr. Lionel say about that?
Well, he likes the country folk. He goes right in with them, you know. He talks right with them and talks their kind of language and just gets right in with them. And they tell a story, he tells one back, you know. And he really enjoys himself around.
What story?
Well, not just, you know, he can tell horse stories, but not anything particular, you know. Anything, whatever comes up. You know, he's raised on a farm. He knows all about horses and things, but you know, he doesn't single out horse stories to tell, but he can.
He's been out with you?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He has?
Yeah. He comes out, he's seen the horse, you know, and he hadn't come to a show. You know, I've taken him down there and show him the horse and everything, country and pasture and all that, you know. And,
what I was saying to Barbara, it was her tape, and this was just a mere comment on my part. She'd been to the carnival with a bunch of the friends over there, and I asked her about the Shropshire lad. I don't know how he fits in over there, but I figure he's something like Johnny Sims, and I don't know anyone in this whole country who speaks for them, who has their ear and can open up the subject for you. I don't know anybody. See, up there, Mr. Lionel can do it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he can down here.
We'll have to see.
I'm almost certain he can't.
Why would that be?
But he would know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Now, you don't know him. You never had contact with him down to T.
Mm-mm.
See, last summer we never really got hold of anybody. That damn hay kept me tied down.
You all didn't find out to use the tape until last part of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, Nick, we learned a lot through Cookie.
Mm-hmm.
We learned a lot.
Now that's Channel 2 right around 100. Channel 2 right around 100 this Saturday, late, before dark, well before supper. Nick and Barbara. Nick hadn't been here very long. He'd been out riding with Barbara. We caught him just as soon as we could. They had cleared it. Nobody here then. And this is his report on his riding in Abitwani. This is Channel 2 over around 100. Now this is after supper. This is after supper, Saturday the 29th of November 69. We've been waiting for Nick to get back and for everything to settle down. We want to work out that unschool chap, the Shropshire lad, Judy, and Kenny, Johnny, Sim, as soon as things settle down. This is Channel 2 over around 105 now.
See, Faye, what we're trying to get into is
horses, you know, you're interested in horses, but the horses also are an opening, you see, to various people that you wouldn't have access to. Now, when I came out here, as I said, I made that great blunder. I got the wrong sort of cattle. I wanted to get into the countryside, and I didn't want to get into the, you know, elite. And I made the mistake of buying a herd of registered cattle. And now, you see, Tommy Boyd, he's one of the, he belongs to the countryside, and he helped me on that corral for a while. He built the corral.
Yeah.
He built it out of this stuff from the old livestock market. But when he saw I wasn't interested in letting him bring some of his mixed brum cattle over here,
okay,
he just didn't come back again. And see, I would have paid him, but he wasn't. That the money wasn't, as it turned out, wasn't what attracted him.
When we talked to Theo, what made that trip? Talked to Theo. He said he could tell by looking at me that I liked Hereford purebred, and that just put me in a class that he wasn't interested in. Not really.
Now, that picture of Judy, obviously she's limited, but she's pretty well up too, and she's always had love with horses, so she's better than anybody we talk about. I don't know just how good she'd be. How good would she be around here, Barbara?
Around here, you can't rate her against people who ride Westerns. And from what I've seen of people who ride Eastern around here, she'd be top notch. I mean, there just isn't anybody around here that could ride better than she could. Because the only people I've seen ride English here make me want to go off and cry. But,
well, she's pretty good.
Good in the way of a person who's been born to it. But if she had not lived around horses all her life, she wouldn't be very good. She's not a great rider. She doesn't do very well in competitions. She rides well, but she's not a particularly good rider. If the going gets, in, you know, sort of
competitive.
Pretty average, really. Just that she'd lived around horses all her life.
But she's got a right light spirit.
Yeah.
If it hadn't been for horses, you'd never know her.
That's true enough.
Now, was she the only one there that you were condescending towards?
Not than Judy. Judy was Judy's about average. I mean, she wasn't particularly lower than average. Most of the girls were about like her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, just the ones you just took the cream of the crop, Jane and...
Jane and Trudy were the cream of the crop, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you just...
I know it.
Well, that's not quite representative. So you just cutting yourself out of these. Now, what I was trying to do was kind of use the Shropshire land. And that's real hard. You see, it's really hard to see it. Now, Bill was a boy with some spirit, wasn't it, Nick?
Yeah.
How about they talk about him?
Well, he was brought up around horses, lived around him all his life.
Yeah.
He knew everything there was about. I mean, you know, he didn't know anything technical, but he was. He knew it. He knew all the common sense about it.
He didn't have much rearing.
That's right. He never went through high school, I don't think.
No, and he didn't.
Neither did his parents, I don't think.
So it said he hadn't had many opportunities.
No.
But he did right well. Now that's right, Trey. You see, you all hit it off right nicely.
Bill and I.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he liked things I like. He liked ride Western, and he liked to do stuff with his horse. You know, he didn't like to just ride. He liked to do stuff on him, work with him and everything. And I did too. And so we just hit off well. You see, we exchanged stories.
Now, is that all you had in common? Just horses.
Just about that. So.
Well, the way it appeared to me, you see, all these fellas have got, there's nobody who can speak for them. There's just nobody. They has any notion at all, any feel for them. That's Bill and Johnny Sims and Johnny Ross. He's the one that got us these horses. I know, it's not like we said the other day, they may not be amongst the elite, but at least the governess is not after them. When they get up in the morning, they don't have to ask themselves the question of whether or not everybody's going to like what they do and moderate their voice, you see, to please.
Cookie, if J.J. pushes him too far, he resigns.
Yes.
And if Bill, if Ms. Davis pushes him too far, he quits. And no thought of tomorrow, he's free.
Now this little thing here, the first time I'd seen this, when smoke stood up from Ludlow and Miss blew off from the Team River, and blithe a field to plowing, against the morning beam I strode beside my team. I'll come back. The blackbird in the coppice looked out to see me stride, and hearkened as I whistled the tramping team beside, and fluted and replied, lie down, young yeoman, what use to rise and rise? Rise, man, a thousand mornings, you're down at last, he dies, and then the man is wise. I heard the tune he sang me, and spied his yellow bill. I picked a stone and aimed it and threw it with a will, and then the bird was still. Then my soul within me took up the blackbird's strain, and still beside the horses along the dewy lane it sang the song again. Lie down, young yeoman. The sun moves always west. The road one treads to labor will lead one home to rest. That will be the best. I don't think it hurts to overdo the meter of that.
No.
It makes it kind of ballad-like. I see the heart of that is this word. You see, he gets up early. And the smoke stands up from Ludlow, and the mist blows up over the river. And blithe spirited he is, you see, to plowing he goes against the morning beam. I strode beside my team. Now that's got the vigor and the life in it, you see. The blackbird and the coppice looked out to see me stride. That's got it, you see. and hearkened as I whistled. Now there's the spirit of the boy, you see. Now that's the countryside. And houseman is seasoned, you see. These are the unschooled ones. But they have what the schooled ones don't have. Or else he wouldn't write this about them.
What Andrew Lytle sees, I guess.
I don't know.
But I mean, why he's drawn to this. Why are you interested in this? In the countryside.
Now, you see, I thought, I'd say, you know, I made that little statement, this sort of thesis, that the horses would, you would profit my experience, and the horses would open up to these things. Now, they can close it, too.
Push the door, too. Thank you.
They can close it, too. Where's that little thing? Now you see, you can't ride in your barrel race and be chaired away. You see, there's too much division in this ministry. Too many standards. Too many, like doing this level of others and horses. The time you won your town, the race, we chaired you through the marketplace. Man and boy stood cheering by. And home we brought you, shoulder high. Now you know, I told you a while ago. Miss Anna's nephew, you see up here. Now you see, he belonged to this country. And he did just that. And what I remember most, what I've seen the most of, is the ball games in the 20s. Evanston and Reddick and Meganope and all had their teams. And they'll show you up here where the ball diamond was. And the man who lived here, Willie Welch, was one of their umpires. And I've heard him relive little episodes of those games. And what did it tell about Frank McCray up here, Fay, when he's listening to that ball games? What was that? You picked that up.
Well, you said the house could catch on fire and burn down, and Fred would never know it.
Frank McCray
would never know it.
No,
he's up. He doesn't ever talk.
No, he never talks much.
In a ball game, he's there by himself, listening to the ball game. He yells and yips and throws it, picks his hat up, throws it in the air, and gets up and dances around and does all these gyrations by himself.
Now he's one. He was on the ball team that Mr. Willie Welch umpired in the 1920s. He had this custom tractor. He's done some things for me. He just retired and let it go to somebody else. And that's those things just clear in his mind. Now this country belonged to him. You see, he was a part of this countryside. Now, how did I see that? Through that little baseball game. Talking about the baseball game. Now, they could win. They were right, and everybody would know them. Whole country.
Mm-hmm.
Whole country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, the word complex, things are more complex than that now, that's true. But still, somehow or other, you don't play baseball, but so many of those fellows still like horses. All of them that I know like horses. All of them do. I don't know one of them that doesn't.
That's right.
They hang on to horses. Now, I mean, the successes of this Shropshire Lad.
Well, Well, look at Mr. Eastman. The thing that brought him to light was those Morgan horses.
Yeah.
And he talked about everything under the sun. But it was those Morgan horses, that
yeah.
pair, that when his eyes lit up and tears came into his
yeah.
eyes.
Yeah.
Now, what is there about horses?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's some way you got to work it. Now, you see, I've never, in my time, I've never been able to talk much. I've had to listen. In the countryside, wherever I went. But I've done some fine listening. I've heard some fine talk. I've heard some fine talk. And I it gets worse and worse as time goes on. I can't talk much. I'll say the wrong thing. My judgment's not right. I don't know. Now, I don't know how it was then, but now they're sensitive. They're highly sensitive. Now, how would you say that? I had this trouble over Sunday school. They were always afraid I was going to come out with a little more vigor, mental vigor than they had.
Mm-hmm.
Always afraid of it. Always afraid of it. So I had to quit going. I couldn't. Most of the time, in this time, in Hausman's time, I'm not. I don't think they were. Was Judy easily stepped on her toes?
Judy was sensitive
yeah.
about it. I mean, she joked about how she didn't know anything.
Yeah.
But I had to be real careful that I didn't show her up.
Yeah.
And since she was such a bold talker and got herself into such excellent jams sometimes with the statements she'd make, it was sometimes hard not to do. But things like what was the group that we had, being from all over the world, knowing a little geography helped, and she could make the most outlandish statements about where a country was in relation to another country. And I had to be real careful either not to set her straight or to set her straight in a way that she wasn't aware of it. But she's very sensitive about it.
Now, you see, they didn't have to worry about that. I think that was before. It's just since then. You see, it's since the governess, is it? Judy, the governess won't bother Judy or our friends that we're talking about.
Well, they weren't sensitive about anything.
But you didn't have that trouble with Bill.
No. Because we had something in common.
Well, now the way it works out to me, it works out to me is, you see, the horses can open up these little wells to you. And you can see the sharp salads and the Judy Tilks and the, well, in a way,
mm-hmm.
in a way, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Very clearly.
That's right. Now, there the Knights and Squires gone to seed a little bit, haven't they? That is, the times have left them. You see, that technology. They don't really know much about horses. They actually know about horses. They don't know much about horses.
True.
Your
my friends?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, they don't. Well, they, as I said before, they, like with Bill, they know, you know, common sense stuff, but not anything terrible, like if a horse got sick, they don't know what to do.
But
they just go on wives' tales and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But hear them talk.
Mm-hmm.
They talk it. Now, mm-hmm. where does that come in?
They talk the poet.
In the talk.
I mean, Cookie's just as sure that jumping a horse off a bank will cure a horse colic as he is of
yeah.
anything else, I guess.
Yeah.
In them.
Because he'll tell you that, and he'll mean it, and if you do it and it works, why, he'll believe it forever on. And even if it doesn't work, he'll believe it. I mean, he'd give it to you in good faith.
Now look, Houseman doesn't think of the Shropshire Lad as, he doesn't, Houseman doesn't think of the Shropshire Lad at the times who left him behind. This is a boy, is the, he's the one that people talk about.
Yeah. No, but they are. The Johnnies and the Bills and the people that Nick talked about, they are the Shropshire Lads.
Oh.
But the times have left.
Oh. Now here it is. Up in the North 40, Leo.
Yeah.
Leo Campbell.
Yeah.
They called him Mr. Campbell. And it seems so clear to me. I called him Leo. He called me Guy. But the neighbors all called him Mr. Campbell. And it was hard for me to see. But I finally did it. You see, somehow or other, his daddy raised the boys and had enough property, got along well enough, that they called him Mr. Now, let me tell you, this fella up at Santa Fe I raised sweet potatoes with, he told me how Ralph Seelan got ahead, or Ralph Seelan's daddy. One of these fine Yankees came down here and had a little money and wanted to get in the vegetable business, and he worked with him. And it didn't take him Seelan long to, he wasn't here, and it didn't take Seelan long to take over what the man had. And apparently that's been done in Florida thousands and thousands of times. And he said to me, that's how Seelan got to be called Mr.
Yeah. Now there's one closer to Alvin, but there's a reason. The person who owns his horse and brought these cattle over here is Alvin Pond, a friend. Yeah, Alvin. Well, do you know that the cookies, that Mrs., that Helen, never speaks of him as Alvin? He's Mr. Pine. Now, somewhere along the line, he got to be Mr.
I believe every one of them, as Faith said, will tell you that if things don't go right, they'll just quit. They don't get fired, they just quit, just like Bill. Now, it looks like there's so many pitfalls.
It doesn't seem to find it that way.
I think President Nixon wants to speak to these people. But there's such an opposition, you see, amongst the young lawyers in Washington that he can't get through to them. And I think my feeling really is that that's what the trouble over Vice President Agnew when he lit into the television, the evening news people, the networks, news programs, is that they slant everything against the Shropshire Lad and the people who belong to the countryside. They slanted against them. They slanted against them, every bit of it. And they can't keep from it. They got no feeling for it. And if they did, it could be that the networks wouldn't let them show it. No, it gets too complex for me. Sometimes I get some ideas. They might, see, I can't think by myself. See, I'm thinking with them. These people now may take exception to you, but you don't have to take exception to them.
Now that's Nick's key, because he doesn't.
Takes a little while, and you get to talking with them, and they, if you're talking about something they like to talk about, then they step you right away. There's nothing to it. You don't talk highfalutin and all, you know, so they don't, they stand aside. They can't talk above their head or about something they don't know about.
How far you got to go tonight?
175 miles.
Well, that's the end of that little session, breaking out that thesis with Barbara and Nick and Faye in the kitchen. Oh, it's late. Oh, 9 o'clock. Nick had to go 175 miles, as he said, back home to the Cape. That's Channel 2 over around 425. Channel 2 over around 425. And the end of that little session, working out a thesis with Nick and Barbara and Faye at the kitchen table on Saturday night, the 29th of November, 69. The 29th of November, 69. This is Channel 2 over around 425:30. Now, this is Sunday night, the 30th of November, 69. This is Sunday night, the 30th of November, 69. Channel 2 over around 4:30. That's supper, after supper. It will be after supper. One of the high points we don't have on tape, we don't have an account of it on tape. They taunt Nick. Looked like the whole fall has been a preparation for Nick. And Cookie sides with the Eastern Riding and Barbara and Faye. And Nick's all by himself. Now, that happened while Faye and I had gone to Bill. Barbara is the sole authority now. And after supper, if we can clear the decks, we'll get it.
There's one thing, Barbara, I'd like to get sort of state, halfway state of my mind before we sign off on this Thanksgiving. Faye and I went to Bill's to get the meat. And when we came back, you all had trashed things out. And Cookie, seemingly, had a big hand in that.
Well, I didn't even start it. I was a bit behind Nick when we came back from that ride, because old Pussy just can't keep up with Molly. She just can't. So Nick got down and been talking to Cookie for a couple of minutes by the time I picked up the paper and wandered down there. And he'd gotten off Molly and was standing, and Cookie had his cigar and Nick had his. And chatting.
I wish I'd seen that.
And talk was going kind of slow. And I wandered up. I said, howdy, Cookie. He said, hello. And he said, now, Nick, and we chatted about something for a minute. I forget what. And then he turns to Nick and he says, Nick, you've been doing it all wrong.
Oh.
Well, don't tell me.
He did. And I said, Cookie, I never said that. And Cookie says, yeah, but I'm saying it. Nick, you've been doing it wrong. And Nick stood there. He says, what do you mean? And Cookie says, you ought to ride that horse English. And Nick said, nah. Ride a Western. Cookie says, no, that horse, you've never seen anything as pretty as that horse ridden under an English rig. And Nick just sort of stood there. He says, nah. And Cookie says, yep. And says, talk about pretty. And then he got started on this horse he was talking about. He wanted to buy. He said,
that gray horse.
That gray horse. And he says, now that's a pretty horse. She's built about the size of Molly, but she's got the build of Pussy, and he had something, but it's got some sore. And he said, he turned to me, see what started. He was talking to, he said that Molly was pretty, and then he turned to me in this real confidential way, and he says, Barbara, do horses ever get cancer? Oh. And I said, well, I've known them to. And he says, well, he was trying to figure out if that's what this horse had, the sore on it. And Nick said no. He thought it was psoriasis, and that you could cure it with this glutathione. So then he started chewing on his cigar a minute, and he says, "Cookie, I'm gonna make you eat your words." And he turned on his heel and he walked up to the house. And Cookie says, "What do you mean?" And Nick says, "Just wait, I'm gonna make you eat your words." And he came up to the house and got that picture. And he brought it back. He sort of walks up to Cookie holding it out in front of him. And he says, "How's that for looking pretty?" And Cookie says, "Yep, looks nice. But you ought to see her under, you just got to see her with an English saddle." Nick just stood there a second, then he reared back, took a step back, and he said, "Cookie, you've deserted me. I thought you were the one person around here who was behind me solid, and now you've gone and deserted me." And Cookie says, "Well, I was. But until I saw that horse ridden English, and I just, you wouldn't believe how good she looks." And Nick says, "No, you've deserted me."
Well, that was pretty clear cut, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now, what was that, Barbara? We were talking out there last night, and you said it wasn't Cookie, it was Fee that had implanted all that in Cookie.
Well, I would, yeah. I think Nick has been ganged up on. I really do. I don't think he had a chance. Because now Cookie will make up his own mind about a thing, but you have to admit you were standing right there beside him when he made it up.
Well, not this. The first time.
Yeah, when he was watched me ride, when he watched me ride.
Well, he's never changed his opinion of Missy.
Well, that's true. But
and he knows how I feel about her. No, sir. I think it was. I think Cookie saw how well she looked. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
He has great admiration for you and your knowledge. He has told me many times.
He has?
Yes, he has.
Is that right?
Yes, he has. And he told me out there just tonight, and he shook his head and pinched his lips, and he said, "That girl ought not to be riding off on Pussy. You don't know how she rides, and Barbara has worked her, and nobody ought to ride that horse but Barbara when she's working it." And I said, "Well, I didn't get there in time to protect Barbara. I could have made up some excuse and saved her." Cooked his head and he said, "You know, I threatened to ride that horse myself." She was in such a bad shape. And he says, "Now Barbara knows what to do." And he shook his head. And Helen spoke and said, "That's why we don't let our children get on that horse. It's not fair. Frank won't let anybody ride Tony. And Laura won't let anybody ride Little Man except Barbara." And Frank said, "No, sir, nobody's going to ride Tony." And they stood there and fumed because that girl went off on your horse that you were working on. And it wasn't right.
He came up and fumed me.
Mm-hmm.
What did he say?
He came up and he sort of stood there and he said, "Barbara, why'd you let that girl go off on your horse?" And I said, "Well, Cookie, I didn't figure she was going to go galloping down the lane on it. I thought they were just going to walk over to the Gleasons." And he said, "It'll take you 3 days to get that horse back where you had her." And I sort of shrugged and said, "Well, I got 3 days."
He was serious.
And he said, "Well, it's, you shouldn't let her. You shouldn't have let her. You just thought of..."
He jumps her.
He jumped me, yeah.
Helen heard you say that. And she turned to me and she said, "You know, this Western riding is what they do out here." And I said, "Yes, I know it. And I said, if we didn't have anything but English riding horses, we wouldn't be very much in fashion, would we, around here? And she said, you sure wouldn't. And Frank said, you couldn't talk to anybody either. And they all picked that point up.
Mm-hmm. To tell Guy what you did with Pussy and what you had told Don before you started.
Well, Don and I have been having a long chat, and we've been sitting around just talking about horses and bits and how to handle a horse. And I was sort of letting go on my little theories. And I'd been we'd been talking about catching a horse. And Cookie, you see, this horse that he had, he said the only thing that he was thinking about buying, said he wished he'd bought. And he said the only thing wrong with it besides that sore was that you couldn't catch it, and it was the people that owned it, its own fault, that they would go out and they would lasso it. If they couldn't catch it, they'd lasso it. And he says it's the worst thing you can do. And I agree with him. And I was telling Don about some trouble we had catching ponies at Tilt and how we finally caught them. And I said the point was, we didn't use force. That when we finally caught him, it was by walking up to him, putting a hand, one of the kids walked up to the horse and put his hand on his mane and led it in. And it took us a while, but when the horse, we finally maneuvered the horse in such a position that he had to give in, or that he had the choice of giving in, and he did. Didn't have to. And that was the whole point of the way I handle a horse. Is to put the horse in such a position that he gives in, but not to force him to give in. Because lassoing a horse doesn't mean the horse has been caught. It just means that you've got him in such a position he can't get away, which is not the same thing. He's still fighting even though you've got him caught. Whereas this, the way we caught our ponies, for instance, they weren't fighting anymore. And then I went out. I never realized it was going to work out like that. But Faye wanted me to lunge Pussy a little bit so she could get some pictures.
Oh.
That was the whole point. And so the children could see it.
Yeah.
And to lunge Pussy. That was the whole point of it. Just started that simple.
Yeah.
They had never seen you lunge.
Yeah. They'd never seen me work her. They'd just been on Hubie when I lunged Hubie with them on it. So I got Pussy out there. And I started her off on her circle, and she started off real well. And then I started working on a trot, and she began to have a little trouble because she couldn't get around the circle very well. She's a bit stiff. And when a horse gets like that, they resist by maybe running or stopping or anything because it's tiring. It's just like doing gymnastics when you aren't in shape for it. So Pussy started just stopping. That was my first trick, was to stop and look at me. And I'd say, walk on. And she'd think about it a little bit, and she'd walk on, and then she'd trot. Well, the next trick was to see how fast she could run. Or no, the next trick was to jump up in the air. And I'd have her trotting, and she'd break into a canter, and then she'd leap up into the air and kick out with all 4 feet and come down and run on again, and then stop, and turn in and stare at me.
And shake her head.
And stare at me some more, and then shake her head. And blow, and then she'd walk on. She'd finally give in and walk on.
That was an exhibition, my
dear. She wasn't through. She went through every trick she knew before that lesson was over. The next one was to see how fast she could run. And she came in close to me. And then she put her head down between her legs and got a good start standing still, and then she'd charge off just as fast as she could go. Run out with the loose tape and hit the end of that tape, and I'd go flying after her because she was going right fast.
And you were going fast too.
And then I'd get my balance and dig my heels in and brace, and she'd come onto the circle and slow down and stop. Because she couldn't keep going around in a circle that fast. So she'd slow down and stop, and she'd turn in and stare at me and shake her head some more.
Oh, it was nothing.
And by that time, she...
You saw it, babe?
Every bit of it. It was better than any circus.
But by that time, she'd worked herself into a state. She just wasn't thinking anymore. And I made a mistake right about then. I spoke to you all.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that set her off again. And that time she really raced.
Mm-hmm.
Just about dragged me over. And I was scared she was heading over toward... Mm-hmm. When I really planted myself, I suddenly realized she was edging over toward Aaron. And
mm-hmm.
and I could just see her getting loose from me and heading that direction. So I planted my feet and held her. But I made a mistake, you see, and spoke to them. And she thought I was urging her on. You should never speak to anybody when you're lunging a horse except the horse.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody should ever speak to you. Because the horse should hear only your voice. So that was my mistake. And so I stopped her and went up to her. And redid the tapes because they were getting tangled by that time. She'd been in and out, away from me and out again so often. And every time she does that, I have to adjust the tape. And it was getting tangled. So I went up to her, and I spoke to her, and she was just trembling, saying,
mm-hmm.
She was so, and she was just confused. She had gotten herself, she confused herself with her own doing, but she managed it. And her little brain just couldn't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt sorry for her, because when I walked away, she, you know, after I'd spoken to her quiet and told her to calm down and shown her a little kindness, she tried to follow me.
Uh-huh.
She wouldn't go back out in the circle, and she tried to follow me and stick that nose right against my arm.
Uh-huh.
So please, I'm confused. What do I do now? So I started her on her circle again and convinced her that she could get away from me, and let the tape out, made the circle bigger. Just let her walk around for a little bit. And then I told her to trot, and she thought about it, and I repeated it, and she trotted on, and she did everything just so nice, just exactly the way it should be done. And then I just told her to, then the saddle, she had on that bareback pad, and the girth on it came undone. So I just told her to stop, and I went up and praised her to the skies. Just told her how great she was. But that, by then she'd given in. And it was the perfect illustration of what I've been talking to Don about. But it wasn't planned.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't planned at all.
He saw it. And was just fascinated. And I didn't know you'd been talking to him about it.
Yeah. It was unreal, really, to sort of have something like that happen right after you've been talking to somebody about something like that.
Yeah. Well, Don takes those things in. He doesn't miss it.
Yeah, he does.
And as it turned out now, this is her whole teaching technique, almost. I mean, it's basic.
Yeah, training the horse, yeah. He's got a nice feel for horses.
I believe he does, Barbara.
He does. Cookie's got it. He's just as considerate for his horses as he is with people. And you don't find too many people that are, you know, that are that way about people, nonetheless, horses.
Yeah.
Now, it's not his fault that he doesn't feed them. I mean, I think his heart's right.
No, he...
But he just can't get over here to be that regular.
Confused, and the more confused they get, the more they run themselves, and the more they'll cut up.
Oh, really?
They get angry about it. Some of them do, at any rate. Some of them get frightened by it, and some of them get angry when they're confused, like little children who don't understand what's wanted of them, and so they pout or scream or something differently. But it's like when you can tell, you know, when a child's tired, they get louder and louder.
Oh.
And more active.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the same with a horse that's confused.
Now, what were you all doing in here at that time?
I don't remember when I came in what you were talking about exactly. Something about if you lived with animals, you knew how to take care of them. I said about cat. I don't remember who said it. And Marie said, tell them about your cat, Missy or Erin. And she said she had a cat named Patricia. And she fed it milk or something. And I said, yes, I knew Patricia. And then you picked up.
Yeah, Faye said I had to tell them the story of Barnaby, tell them about Barnaby and Debbie.
Oh, did you tell them about them?
Yeah, so that's what I was doing. I was just finishing up about Barnaby and Debbie when you came in.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I said Barbara knew some cats.
A bit different than I told it on the tape. But tall tale, I think. That wasn't exaggerated.
Well, it wasn't exaggerated, but it...
little things like the size of the kitten. It was about the climbing the poles. And that was exaggerated a little bit.
The
Barnaby old sat down and waited for that kitten to climb the poles, and he was struggling up the poles. And Barnaby washed his face a little bit, and the kitten struggling up the pole. And Barnaby looked at me, and he looked over at the kitten. He put a whisker in place. Finally, the kitten made it to the top of the pole and teetered out to the end. And Barnaby got up real slow-like, very carefully walked out around the end of the pole, just out beyond where the kitten could jump. And that poor kitten left sitting up there on the end of that pole, just furious.
And Missy said, a little while after you had told her, Missy said, but where is that kitten now? You left the kitten.
I left the kitten sitting on the end of that pole.
One of the things you said when the kitten was there, that you all knew about animals, and so you made Barnaby feel not left out. Now, how'd you say that?
Well, when the kitten first came, and the first time Barnaby came in the club room, and the kitten was there, a couple of us made sure we went over to make a fuss over Barnaby, because we didn't want him to be jealous about the kitten. And just about every time he'd come in the club room, that kitten was there, somebody'd make a point of making a fuss over him to make sure that he didn't get jealous of it. Because especially right first, he was scared of it. I mean, he didn't even know what it was.
And you went in a little bit more into how frightened Barnaby was of the cat. And you don't realize it, but you made a point. But the kitten, we fed the kitten. And the kitten grew. And when the kitten acted like a cat, Barnaby knew his duty.
Yeah.
And you hesitated. It was rather dramatic. And the children were there, you know, like, what are you going to do? You should have seen them. They were just like this. What was Barnaby going to do? And you waited. Tell me you didn't make it different. I
made
here.
It different, yeah.
And you waited, and you had that sense, mm-hmm. that timing. I looked at Miles and he just couldn't breathe. I didn't exaggerate. You didn't look at that. He had to teach that kitten to be a stable cat.
How about it?
It was darling the way you did it.
What did you say about Faye?
Go ahead, say it. I exaggerate.
She exaggerates beautifully.
You don't realize what timing you had on that, but I was watching the children. When you were talking, how beautifully you leveled off with those children and made it was the same story, but it was on their level, and yet you weren't condescending. And you did the same thing with Cookie.
You talk the way Cookie could understand. And Nick said that's all it takes to get along with these people. In the tape, I thought.
Well, that means that Barbara can ride Western and go out amongst these people?
Sure it does.
Now, this is Sunday night after supper while we're waiting for the Forsyte Saga to go on at 9 o'clock. Barbara fills in with her side of the Thanksgiving, of what happened Saturday afternoon, really, or Sunday morning, Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning. Several subjects, these three subjects so far. Now, this is the end of this whole reel, Channel 2 over. This is the end of Channel 2 over. It's still some ways to go, but I stopped at around 890, channel 2 over, 890, channel 2 over, and that's the end of this reel. And I'll continue it on the next reel, on Barbara, reel 7. Now, this is getting into the talk after supper while we're waiting for the Forsyte Saga at 9 o'clock on Sunday night, the 30th of November, 69. This is 890, 95, channel 2 over, and the end of this reel.